Council meeting for Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019 at 9 a.m. is hereby called to order. I would like to welcome everyone to council meeting this morning. We have regrets from Councilor Susan McLeod. I would ask that anyone that has an electronic device, please put it on the silent mode. I have no changes to the agenda as circulated. Are there any changes to the agenda? Councilor Fancy?
Yeah, I'd like to do a report on just our clothing giveaway on Saturday, if it is possible.
And you'd like to do that under 14-0 reports?
Yes, and don't mind.
Yeah. Any other changes? So under 14.0 reports, we have clothing giveaway, Councilor Fancy. A motion to approve the agenda as amended would be appropriate. Moved by Councilor Fizz, seconded by Deputy Mayor Kelly. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Under presentations, we have a presentation this morning under 3.1, but it will be at 10 a.m.
Okay.
As it states on the agenda. So we will move on to 4.0, tabling of petitions. We have no petitions to table this morning. Are there any petitions to table today? Second call for petitions. Third and final call for petitions. We have no petitions this morning. Brings us to 5.0, public question comment session, and this is where members of the gallery have up to 5 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address.
This is Mayor Leon Robinson, College Street in Liverpool. A couple of questions or comments. Under looking over the minutes of your last meeting that you had in the village, October the 8th, I wasn't able to attend that meeting, and I was looking in there, and you awarded a contract for the food and beverage at the Cruise and Air Center, and it was approved there, and I had a question there. Were there any other bidders on that?
The operation of the canteen was provided to the region by Angela Ahmad.
Yes.
It was submitted after the request for proposals has closed as an unsolicited bid, and was the only one we had at the time.
So you had no other bids?
No.
Okay. Just for one thing further on that, I haven't been over there yet. I've heard a number of very good comments on the operation there now. People are very pleased with the food and the way it's been operated. So I think we've made a lot of choice.
And I've heard that as well.
Yes.
So we're pleased at this point with the operator.
Sounds good. Another thing there, looking at the second quarter financial statement, the revenue has developed up to over 80%. Most of that is because the taxes come in early in the year. So, but as far as revenue otherwise, seems to be pretty well on. And with respect to the expenses, there was one there, and then I got a revised statement this morning, the one I picked up on Friday, there's a revision on it, and the old one showed 80-some% being spent on recreation. Now I see that's come down to a more favorable level than 50%.
And those points will likely come out during our discussion this
yes,
morning on that budget.
Coming up a little later on. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you, Leon.
Bill Fox, 121 Bowery Road, Blake Point. My name is Mr. Mayor, members of council. I have just a brief question in regard to the recent storms and the difficulties in the parking lot. Have we received the final report from the consultants who were studying that particular issue? And secondly, will anything be done towards remedial of that condition this fall? I realize it's getting late, probably not, but some people are asking the question.
My understanding is that the consulting report will soon be prepared and finalized. It will come to council, I would expect, in the next month or so. As far as work starting, once it appears before council and council has an ability to look at the options, there would then be a need to source additional funding through grants. And so this may be a longer period of time than some of us would like to have, but it will proceed to my expectation on a steady pace.
Okay.
game, Leon?
Can I just make a comment to that? I'm thinking on the same wavelength as Bill is, and I'm wondering, we had the initial report back here a number of months ago, back in the spring, I believe, from the consultants. So this is a further report to come along with further recommendations, because they had a number of options there at that point in time.
It would be a broader report with issues in addition to what they initially presented.
And this is with the same company?
Yes, CBCL consultant.
Because here we had a presentation very much a few ago with respect to what can go down there in the parking area, or not the parking area, but just in the private part, and that was from a different firm.
Waterfront development plan, that one was.
Yes, and that one there had a proposal for the possible library being there. I've heard since then from other sources that the library is going to be built where the old building is being torn down today, the old Westville building.
Thank you for that information.
That's what I told. Because I don't know.
Yes, Mr. Dodd.
There, in regard to the canteen service at Bean's Place, I was there the last two hockey games, and the service is much faster than it had been previously. The food is good, and when you get it, it's hot. It doesn't seem to sit on the counter for about 10 minutes, wait for someone to come to pick it up, and people sitting in my particular section were very pleased with the product that was being served, and it's just a tad cheaper than it was previously, so all things moving in the right direction.
Well, thank you, Bill, and certainly I've heard many good comments as well on the operation of the canteen, so we're very pleased and looking forward to a long-term service there. Thank you. So we will now move on to 6.0, approval of minutes, and under that we have 6.1, regular council minutes of October the 8th, 2019. Were there any errors or omissions of those minutes which were previously circulated? If not, a motion to approve those minutes would be in order. Moved by Councillor Johnson, seconded by Councillor Fisk. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. We have nothing today under 7.0, dangerous or unsightly premises. Nothing under 8.0, economic development. Nothing under 9.0, corporate services. Under 10.0, engineering and works, we have 10.1, trucking a bulk salt tender, and the director of engineering, Brad Roeder, is approaching the presentation desk. Who would like to take the lead on 10.1? Councillor Johnson?
Okay, I'd like to recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality approve the tender PW06-2019-2020, trucking a bulk salt, be awarded to Bandai Excavating and Trucking for the tender price of $41 per metric ton plus HST for the 2019-2020 winter season.
Second to that, Councillor Fisk. Brad, do you have anything to add?
Sure. This particular company, we've worked with them over the years on various projects. They have taken this work. A few years ago, they were low bid. We had absolutely no problem, so we don't hesitate to recommend them. It's a little bit higher than last year, probably about $1,200 higher overall for the winter, but every year, of course, there's, you know, prices go up that come back to us. This is about 3% higher, so we can't forecast storms that precisely, so we don't budget storms that precisely. We look at averages over a few years' time, so, you know, it wouldn't say that it's going to be a budget hit that we're going to have to endure at this point.
Any questions or comments from councillors? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you, Brad. Under 11.0 finance, we have 11.1, Hillsview Acres Group Repair. And Director of Finance Jennifer Keating Hubley is coming to the presentation desk. The information on 11.1 was previously circulated. Are there any questions or comments of counselors to Jennifer on this item?
There's a recommendation.
Let's move to that one. Who'd like to take the lead on the recommendation? Counselor Neal.
I move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality agrees to submit an emergency funding request to Department of Health and Wellness for an amount of $25,000 for immediate repairs of the asphalt shingles at the Hillsview Acres, and that Victor Warham Construction and Roofing be contracted to complete those repairs at the earliest opportunity, and that in the interim, contract the cost be funded from the Hillsview Acres Reserve account.
Seconded that. Councilor Feller. Now I will ask if there's any comments or questions. Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. 11.2, water on collectible accounts. Who would like to take the lead on 11.2? Councilor Feller.
I so move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality approves the write-off of water consumption portion of utility accounts totaling $248.32 as follows. Number 913233 in the name of Jay Winters, formerly of 283 Church Street, Liverpool, for $215.96. Number 210800 in the name of Daisy Wynott Mansfield, formerly 65 Burr Street, Liverpool, for $33.36.
Seconded to that. Councilor Fitch. Any questions or comments of councilors on this issue? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. And moving on to 11.3, and there is no motion for this one. This is the second quarter financial statements. Jennifer, did you have any highlights that you wanted to address in this?
Sure. I know, right? So, when you go through it, our organics and recycling seem to be down slightly, according to 50% of the year. It's just usage. That does tend to move. I expect it'll pick up in the next quarter and then drop back again for the last quarter of the year. So it's not unusual for that to be low this time of year. We have our insurances. Some of those categories look like they're up a little bit. Actually, our insurance bill wasn't up over last year. It's just the way it's categorized. Where we have a new insurer, a new company that we're using for our insurance bills, the breakdown that we're receiving from them is a little different. It's a very lengthy spreadsheet when I break down the insurances over the multiple departments. And so I've broken it out a little differently in some of the other categories. It would look a little lower, but they're absorbed and not just specifically tagged insurance. So that's pretty much even keel. It's still down $90,000 from our previous supplier, so that's still good. We didn't lose anything there. We have the scholarships. Those are paid out. They're awarded. They've already been awarded, but those are paid once we receive confirmation from the schools that they've been enrolled. So we've only received the one. That's why there's only the one confirmation in there. But the other ones have been received since the statement was produced for the end of September. So those will be going out soon. The building inspector training, that's up a little bit, if you notice. That's because the building inspection training courses are sporadic and sort of held at random, so we pick up on those when they're available, normally only available once a year, but our new second building inspector has been taking advantage of those courses, so that's good. His training's picking up in the background then for a future replacement. We had snow plow repairs. That line item was up substantially over budget. We had a motor go in sidewalk plows, so that's why that line item is up. The sludge removal, you'll notice that in under our sewer, that was $125,000 for that sludge removal, but we took care of that issue that we had this summer, so that's great. That should take care of that now for another few years. The first statement that went out, you'll notice that the recreation expenditures were up because the town hall maintenance budget line item was showing us a $641,000 expenditure. That was a typo. It's should have been $6,410. So you have the new revised statements there on that. The waterfront flood study, when we completed the year last year, so when we were preparing our budgets in February last year, we expected that that study would be complete by March 31st. We didn't have the information back from CBCL by the end of the year, so we ended up having an extension on that to June 30th. But the expenditures were not included in this year's budget because we expected that we would be finished by March 31st, but the revenue side of it wasn't either. So there'll be a revenue offset, and the expenditures on that waterfront line item, Liverpool waterfront line item, are a little bit higher than we're budgeted for. I don't think I have any other highlights unless you have questions.
Any questions, comments, councillors? Councillor Curley?
Under curbside inspection, do we still have that?
We do. It was on hold for a little bit. I think Scott was doing some of it because Sandra had been injured. But it's going to pick back up soon. Yeah, no, Sandra had been injured. She was struck by a vehicle backing out of a driveway.
Yes.
So she was off for a little bit. But I expect her to be back soon. I believe that she intends to come back soon on that. So.
She's also working full time. Right?
I don't know that. My only concern is that really, really early in the morning, she puts in a couple hours for us doing her curbside inspection, yeah.
Balance remaining zero. Is that? I'm not understanding what that means.
It's probably the percentage. The formula is not in the percentage.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's balance there. Yeah, there's balance remaining. So just the budget minus the actual to date is the balance remaining. So if you're seeing zero, it must just be a typo.
Well, I am seeing zero.
Yeah.
It's on page 15.
Yeah, so the balance remaining is 18,000 less 2256.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a typo.
Okay, thank you.
Any other councillor? Councillor Johnson?
Just clarification, Jennifer. This is just the operating budget, right? It's nothing to do with capital or any of the reserve stuff in there.
There's no reserve on here, no, but there is capital at the last page. So it's the operating budget, and then it's Hillsview Acres, and then it's the water utility, and then it's capital on the back side.
Yeah, no, but my main question I'm trying to get at is I'm wondering what our plan is. Additional gas tax money, where that sits within the budget program.
You don't see that in the operating budget,
yeah.
But you will see where we've allocated it for this year in our five-year capital plan. So the only gas tax money that we're using this year is We used $90,000 of that for the first phase of the Trestle Trail Bridge, which is actually not showing in here, but we didn't pay it out last year because they hadn't completed that first phase, and they have. We have allocated some money depending on the needs of that Trestle Trail Bridge project this year as part of phase two, as part of our contribution for phase two. But I believe they have a few years to complete phase two, so I don't know that we'll be expending that this year. It will be dependent on whether they complete that part this year. Waterloo, we weren't approved for the funding request that we put in for Waterloo, so that Waterloo project will be gas tax money this year as well. You don't see the balance of what's in that reserve anywhere in here, just that we've allocated so much for it each year, so. Waterloo project this year, Trestle Trail Bridge, that broadband investment, if anything happens with that, but I mean that's dependent on what goes on with the federal and provincial funding end of that, but our contribution portion for anything that happens with broadband would come from the gas tax money as well. I don't anticipate that coming out of there this year either, but that's in our capital plan going forward.
So I guess to that question, and when will we
We don't review the five-year capital throughout the year. No, it's annual. So during budget deliberations, we'll review the five-year capital plan. The only thing that's been approved and that will be happening in any given year is what we've approved for the current year's capital budget. So we know we're going to spend gas tax money on the Waterloo project this year. And I believe we said 1.2 or 1.3 million, and then any difference would have to be a debenture. So we'll see where that comes in. If it comes in under the allocated amount that we had put in our motion for the gas tax expenditure, then great. We won't have to borrow the difference. I believe we said that the full year's allotment for gas tax, which this year is supposed to be twice as much as it was the previous year, so that 1.4 million dollars that were allocated for the gas tax money this year will be spent on the Waterloo project, and any difference will have to be a borrowing. Which is what we had in the motion when we approved the Waterloo project outside of our regular budget motion approvals, because in our original motion for approving it on the budget, we had anticipated receiving some money for them application for funding from that federal and provincial money. And where we didn't have funding for those, I believe we had applied for three phases, we were denied that funding. And so we said this year we're going to go ahead and do the first phase of the Waterloo project, and we would fund it using that gas tax money.
Do you have a follow-up question or a comment, Councillor Johnson?
No.
Thank you. Councillor Taylor?
Basically, what you're saying, Jennifer, is the extra gas tax money that we received above and beyond after budget just got absorbed in the regular gas tax line item, correct?
Correct. The regular reserve account. I mean, we're required to reserve that money in a separate account and allocate interest to it throughout the year. So it has to be a separately accounted for reserve,
right,
of course. And our five-year capital plan always has the plans for the expenditure or the allocation of that money throughout the 5 years. And we had a substantial amount going forward in the reserve, so we were able to still continue to fund the projects we had in our five-year capital, or estimate what we might be doing in 5 years and what the gas tax money would be spent on over those 5 years. And so that extra was afforded us the ability to begin the Waterloo project, whereas otherwise we wouldn't have been able to start that, having been denied that funding application.
About when we had budget, we were going to move forward with the Waterloo project with the gas tax money, and then after that, the additional funds came in from the gas tax. So
when we approved our five-year capital plan, we had approved the fact that we had applied for funding.
Right.
But we hadn't received any information. We hadn't received approval or denial on that application at that time.
But we were already starting the project, were we not? We had plans.
No, we weren't going to until we received notification of that funding.
Was that confusing?
CAO?
Just so there is no confusion, we do the capital budget each year, which outlines project we're going to do, where the financing is going to come from,
mm-hmm,
and we don't do those capital projects unless the financing is in place, unless there's some other revenue stream.
Okay.
And so at the budget time, we budgeted for the Waterloo project with provincial federal money, which we didn't get. But in the meantime, we knew we were doing the Brooklyn project getting it done. The federal government announced they were going to double our gas tax money, so at that time, a report brought to council authorized it and approved it,
mm-hmm,
that we would take both portions of the gas tax money this year to do the Waterloo project. So there is no excess money or any extra money anywhere that people are assuming is there. It's not there. Now, if the project comes in under budget, there may be a little bit there, depending on what that number comes back as. But that was approved by council after the budget by motion. So that's where the money is. And so there's not a... And so we've got... And in the capital budget, you'll see we've got some money allocated for broadband.
Yes.
We've got some money allocated for Trestle Trail. And so when you take all that money, there's very little money left in that gas tax account for other projects.
Correct.
So all that money, for the most part, there's probably a couple hundred thousand maybe at the most. But other than that,
guess I'm just not remembering when we had a motion to absorb all that money. That's the part that I'm missing.
I'm not sure if you might absorb all that money.
Well, when they announced the second gas tax money,
right,
that it would just, I thought that that was extra funding that maybe it'll do a separate project. But I don't remember it being part of the conversation about water. I got it, but
it was probably end of April, I believe, when we brought that motion forward that we were going to go ahead with phase one of Waterloo. Not we didn't approve phase two and phase three. We just approved phase one with a $1.4 million because it was $700,000 twice. And then we budget approval for the first phase was $1.68 million. And we said we would borrow for that difference of whatever amount over and above those 2 years' worth of gas tax money for this year was. But it was, I believe it was the end of April. It might have been the beginning of May, but I think it was the end of April. But I can certainly forward that to you if you
like. No, I'm not questioning that. I just don't remember it. And I think what I do remember is that we were just talking gas tax money. I didn't realize that that part had been added to, you know, the second amount.
Yeah.
That's fine. Just trying to understand. Thank
hopefully
you.
We come in under and we don't need to worry about the borrowing, but we'll see where we're at. We will need to borrow if we come in budget at 1.6 in our actual, because our gas tax money was only 1.38, I think.
Just one more question. If we wouldn't have got that second amount, we would have automatically had to borrow? Because we were proceeding.
Or we wouldn't have proceeded with the first phase of Waterloo, but
There
was it's definitely helpful in our next phases of what we need to do for that sewer over there, and it's certainly remediating a problem that we had in that area, so it was beneficial for sure that we were able to begin it, but we probably wouldn't have begun that first phase if we hadn't gotten that extra.
Can I ask one more question? Just to the CAO, are we able to apply for that again next year?
When they call for applications again, yes.
Okay.
For the phases, the next phase.
So we can just apply per phase. It's not one big project. So if we were declined for the big project, we can still break it down into three different.
It's our intent.
Yeah, we had originally thought about one project, but three cash flows or three phases.
Oh.
So we're almost done the first part of it. So we can't apply for that one again.
No.
But once they call for applications, but it probably won't be for another 2 years, I would expect, depending on.
Oh, really?
Then, because it's a 10-year program, and they spent
a lot of it.
About 40%, 50% in the first year, so they got to spread it out over 10 years. And so I expect it'll probably be, now, sometimes different things happen or different dates come up and they announce it earlier. But it'll probably be, I think, at least another year.
So then the challenge next year will be to get the funding or find funding to do the second phase of Waterloo, correct?
Right, and probably the only option is going to be a borrowing. And if that's the case, then that's going to put pressure on an already depleted sewer reserve, which may require an increase in sewer rates across everybody.
Very likely council will be saddled with the decision that if there's 10 more years before Waterloo needs to be completed, there will be programs available to apply for, which would be beneficial to the taxpayer. So that'll be the decision that council makes. Do you defer it until you can actually get an application approved for cost-shared funding? And the program that was applied for last winter was a 73% federal and provincial cost sharing, so significant savings to the taxpayers locally. Councilor Fancy on the list next.
No, I think we're all in that same state. We didn't understand, maybe possibly, because everybody seems to be in the same confusion, and for this not extra gas tax money, but the money that we're coming in. Because I've seen other municipalities who've used it to do other things. So of course we've got other things that are on the books that we're trying to look at, but not understanding it, I guess, because that's three of us now who said we didn't understand it. So maybe it's something we need to maybe just explain it better or something could be wrong.
It just worked out well for us that we did receive that extra gas tax money so that we could begin that project, because otherwise we would have been postponing it.
Maybe we understood better than we know better, because we were thinking of other projects we could do that were outside of that. And that's what we're all saying. It isn't that we just one person or something.
Well, it allowed us to leave in the budget our portion for this Trestle Trail Bridge repair and the broadband expansion. So you know, we were able to leave that there, so that was good.
Councilor Johnson?
Well, I think mine is just to add on to, just to get a little bit more clarity, is the allocation of the gas tax fund, I think, comes down to the definition of infrastructure. And I don't know whether us as a region, our definition of infrastructure is the same as the intent for which the money has been allotted and sent out. I'm kind of looking for some clarification as to what the federal government indicates gas tax money, the definition of infrastructure, is when they allot the money versus what we allot it to when it gets to our bank.
They have a very clear list of projects that are eligible and not eligible for gas tax funding money, and where we have allocated it in our five-year capital plan and for this year with the Waterloo plan falls into their eligibility categories.
Does it all have to be a capital-related project?
I don't believe it's specifically tagged as capital, no, but there is a very clear list of projects that are eligible for gas tax money and those that aren't.
Have we been privy to that?
Website.
Yeah, I believe it comes right up on the first page of their website.
First page of what?
Their website. It's on their website.
Of their website?
Mm-hmm.
Have we get a hard copy of it as council?
It's been discussed
it's
at council during our mandate, yes.
Yeah.
Whether you have physical page, I don't know, but it has been part of the discussion. But it's certainly easy to get, Councillor Johnson. It's not a secret document.
No, I'd like to see
be circulated.
I don't have privy.
Sure.
I live in one of those low-speed internet areas and don't necessarily have access to it. So.
They added in recreation a number of years ago when mm-hmm. the new agreement came into effect, and that's the only reason we were able to include the Trestle Trail Bridge repairs as gas tax allocated money in this year going forward. We wouldn't have been able to do that with the former agreement, but the new agreement allowed for recreation, and that Trestle Trail Bridge then fit the categories where it previously would not have.
So my question is, can I get a copy of
sure.
that document?
Yep.
And I would suggest that a copy be printed and put in the mail slot for all councilors.
Absolutely.
And everyone will have a copy. Any other comments or questions to councilors on this item? CAO, did you have anything, Dave? Jennifer? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jennifer. Appreciate it. We have nothing today on the 12.0 Recreation and Community Facilities. Under Planning 13.0, we have 13.1, reappointments to the Planning Advisory Committee. Our Director of Planning, Mike McLeod, is going to give a presentation guest. Who would like to take the lead on 13.1. Deputy Mayor Kelly.
I recommend that Julie Petrella, District 2, Mary White, District 4, Paul Connolly, District 6, each be reappointed to the Planning Advisory Committee for a term to expire on October 31st, 2021.
Seconded to that, Councilor Fisk. Is there any discussion on that information and motion that was previously circulated to Council? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. 13.2, bylaw of enforcement vehicle replacement. Deputy Mayor Kelly.
I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality authorize staff to proceed with the sealed request for quotes process for the purchase of a new mid-size truck for bylaw enforcement with a purchase price not to exceed $42,000 plus HST and be funded from equipment reserve.
Seconded to that. Councilor Johnson. Mike, would you like to give us a quick overview on this?
Yeah, absolutely. As you're aware, the region or the planning department currently has two vehicles that it utilizes in the its day-to-day operation, that being one of the bylaw enforcement officer and the other being the building inspector. The building inspector's vehicle was replaced last winter as part of the regular 10-year, I guess, replacement schedule. So with that, there's currently two vehicles.
You'll recall we have hired an additional building inspector last spring to assist with the duties under the building inspection department. And the new building inspector is, I guess, taking his training to become a formally certified building inspector, and he's nearing completion of the component whereby he'll be able to go out and do his own inspections under the residential component of the building building code. So, so with that, we have two vehicles and essentially three staff. Now, the bylaw enforcement officer's vehicle is a 2011, and under the replacement schedule, it was due to be replaced in 2021. So I guess it's my recommendation to get the most out of the staff we have is to purchase or to move ahead the purchase of the bylaw enforcement vehicle from 2021 to now. And then utilize the existing truck of the bylaw enforcement officer with the new building inspector. As you're aware, our current senior building inspector is nearing, I guess, retirement age, and at some point in time, Tim will be replacing him, so we'll be going back to two staff. But in the interim, that really three vehicles are required by the department to carry out its duties. So we're requesting to move ahead that purchase of the bylaw enforcement vehicle.
Any questions or comments of councillors? Councillor Krillick?
A couple questions. I don't see any budget implications on this motion. Surely that has extra gas.
I guess it's funded through the equipment reserve as part of the regular replacement. We're just moving that up. The money is there in the reserve for the purchase, but the purchase originally was scheduled for 2021, so we're just moving that ahead. So the money is currently allocated for that, which is a year and a half or so ahead of time. So,
okay. Second question is, what would be the duties of a building inspector if they would require a truck versus just a vehicle that may not cost $45,000?
I guess.
Is there any equipment that they take with them? I understand the bylaw enforcement, dogs, things like that. But
yeah, I guess more so the off-road nature of a truck as compared to a car or something. The trucks travel in all weather, all roads through the county. So we need something that's relatively rugged because for the beating, pounding that the vehicles take on during their day-to-day operations. So they're covering Queens County from one end to the other, and as you're aware, the gravel roads and private roads are significant. So we need something that's fairly robust. And unfortunately, when you price out some of these vehicles, there's nothing cheap anymore to get to the specs that we need for our vehicles. So, and I guess at the end of the day, when the vehicles are no longer utilized, the works department will utilize them if there's still some life left in those for their purposes as well. So,
can I answer? Thank you.
Yeah.
If I may just comment on that. So the one that we're replacing is a 2001, and the frame is gone. Like, it's going to be junked for metal.
Yeah.
And that's how much of a beating that truck has taken over the years on the back roads and dealing with building inspectors in the woods and things.
Yeah.
And so we've gotten 10 years out of it, which is, it's only got 147,000 kilometers on it.
Yeah.
But the truck is so gone with the beating it's taken, and the frame is essentially gone. It'll have to be jumped for crowd metal.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that was always the intent, that because when Bill's truck, we got the new one, it was the intent that we hoped to get a year or so out of that vehicle. But just, there was nothing left of it. Body was good, but frame was totally shot, so.
Councilor Johnson.
Well, I'm really confused. It doesn't take much on a Tuesday morning, but at the end of the day, I thought this was going to be an additional vehicle, not a replacement vehicle, so that the building inspector, the trainee, and the bylaws enforcement officer would all have a vehicle.
They would, but I'm not sure what the time frame is on our current senior building inspector, but at some point in time, he will be retiring. So at that time, we'll only require two vehicles. And by that time, the current bylaw enforcement vehicle will be beyond its 10-year. So that will go back probably to the works department if there's any life left in that. So our department will still have the two vehicles at the end of the day.
But the damaged frame component?
That was the old building inspector's truck. That's just for clarification. That's no, the 2011 Kellyanne's. That's as far as we know is still good. But the old building inspection truck. That's right. That was.
No, that clears it up. We're assuming that by 2021 we're going to have a need for two vehicles instead of three when that vehicle expires.
That's right.
Councilor Clancy.
And that's basically what I was going to ask. We're not looking at adding another truck to the fleet. Somewhere along the way, we have to bring these all up to a spot. This is only a temporary fix while the transition between building inspectors.
That's right. In 2021, we would have been in that same boat where we're replacing that truck and would have three vehicles. And if there was any life left in the bylaw enforcement at that time, there would still be three vehicles. So it's just moving that schedule ahead of what was originally.
You wouldn't be moving that ahead if the other truck would have been.
Well,
usable.
Exactly. So, and that's, yeah.
Any other questions or comments of councilors? Are you ready for the questions?
Yes, sir.
All those in favor of the motion? Is it unanimous? Thank you. Who would like to take the lead on 13.3? Councilor Williams?
Move that the council of the region of Queens Municipality reappoint Lisa Conway, Chris Mansfield, Danielle Robertson, Linda Rapuse, Linda Moulton, Leslie Scott, and Peter Leslie to the Heritage Advisory Committee for the term to expire on October 31st, 2020.
Seconded by Councilor Johnson. You've seen the document circulated. Are there any questions or comments on that? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Thank you. Which brings us down to 14.0 reports, clothing giveaway. Councilor Fancy, would you like to speak on this issue?
Okay. It was brought to my attention probably a couple months ago that our special constable Kellyanne Hurley and Ginny Allen and Sylvia Hurley were looking at trying to see what we could do here in Queens County for a winter clothing giveaway. I guess it was done by, I think it was Kinetts, I think years ago. I think they used to do it. And of course, down in Bridgewater, we just heard the last few weeks where they were doing giveaways down in the new mall. And it was, and everybody has clothing to give away to be able to, and there's a lot of needs. So they organized this and they, of course, I came along and was part of it, and we, this last Thursday and Friday, the 17th and 18th, we had a gathering of clothes into the food bank, because the food bank offered their location to be able to take place, and we had, I think it was close to 400 jackets, winter jackets of all ages, and there was everything else that came along with any kind of winter apparel. And on Saturday we had, I think it was over 150 people who attended, who came and received the clothing. And of course, you know, the funny thing about it is when even on Saturday morning talking around to everybody else to discuss about this, people, even though it was on the radio, it was on everything else, people still said, I never heard about it. So I think there's that. It still gets back to that same problem of communications and some kind of a paper issue that we need to have in our county. I mean, it brings up that kind of an issue along with it. But we left with the food bank, who will be giving out to clients during the week, and if anybody comes up to still have it, so they're still there to be given away. There were a lot of people involved, and I don't want to start rattling them off because I know I'll miss them. But we had Well, I will try some. Like Tim Hortons and McDonald's and who gave away coffee for them and some people gave away a gift card for some food and there was the region who helped supply with especially even with having Kellyanne there and other groups that all chipped in to try to help make this happen. And I think it's a wonderful thing for our community. We need to get reaching out. We need to get people to know it isn't. I think sometimes we get thinking it's because I try to get out in other areas and I think sometimes we think that our food bank even is a Liverpool food bank. It's not the Queen's County. We need people to get in. We need to get busing to get them in. We need to work on making sure that these things get bigger and better and it's all inclusive for all Queen's County. And along with this, I can also say too that the senior safety has opened up something called cells for seniors to be able to get cell phones into seniors so they could be able to have more communication. We're working on our community, and I think that's a really good thing when we have people that's working and understanding that we have needs and trying to fill those needs. That's it.
Thank you, Councillor Fancy. Any questions or comments to Councillor Fancy on this item? Councillor Johnson?
I think just for everybody's information, North Queens, they have a community food network resource that's going to be opening the doors in mid-November, which will not only serve the need for the food, but also the clothing and a host of other projects. And that funding is coming in place very shortly. And like I said, it should be open for the holiday season for the needs of the people in North Queens. Partnering with South Queens, but not necessarily a member of Feed Nova Scotia. So just as information.
Thank you, Councillor Johnson. Any other councillor? So thank you. Very good report. That brings us down to the end of our open meeting. We will take a 10-minute recess and come back at 10 o'clock for the Mersey Hydro Project update presentation. We will now resume council meeting, and of course today we're pleased to have representatives of Nova Scotia Power here today to give us a presentation on the Mersey Hydro project. And of course I would ask our local resident, Kerwin Huskins, who's manager of Hydro for Nova Scotia Power, if he'd like to introduce everyone to this.
Sure, thanks Dave. Thank all of you for having us here today. It's actually a very exciting time for us, as well as I'm sure for our whole region. So quickly I'll run through who is here today and we'll start our presentation. So first, Mark Sidebottom, he'd be our Chief Operating Officer for Nova Scotia Power. Second one down in the corner is Phil Collier. He'd be our Director of Capital Projects for Nova Scotia Power. Lisa Lane is our Manager of Corporate Affairs for Nova Scotia Power. Baron Young, he's our Senior Project Manager for NSPI, so he's a large part of this project. Right next to me is Mike Gamero. He's our Operations Superintendent for Western Hydro, so he has everything in this end of the province. And as Dave mentioned, I'm Carl Huskins, and I know everyone here, so yeah. I'm the manager for hydro operations of the province.
Thank you very much, Carol. So we'll turn over the presentation to you at this point.
Well, thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Council, for the invitation today. It's for us very exciting to be talking to you about this project and also how we can work together as this project goes forward. We're very grateful for the partnerships that have developed through time with our operating team locally. And as we go forward into this project, we want to further strengthen those partnerships and work together as this project goes forward. Just want to give you a bit of context to the Mersey and the importance of the Mersey Hydro System in the story about going green or having less carbon in our environment. And for us, the Mersey is an integral part of that. You know, the future of electricity is moving from coal to clean, as we would say that, where we decarbonize it, and then it allows for much cleaner options for energy use in the future. And of course, that was a main feature of yesterday's conversation, but we won't get into that. But I think, you know, for all of us, it's important that this transition is affordable, it is accessible, and, you know, it also is looking at resiliency in the future, which is adapting to climate change. And the Mersey Hydro Project does all of these things, which is very exciting. You know, we're on that road, and we've been on the road of removing carbon and coal from the Nova Scotia Power electricity grid for quite a while. The greenhouse gas emissions in Nova Scotia are down by 35% since the start of this journey. For context, the Kyoto Protocol and the promise in Paris had a 30% carbon reduction. So here in Nova Scotia, we're actually ahead of that commitment. We're proud to be part of that journey in Nova Scotia Power, but there's still more to do, because that's not far enough. We really need to move to even more sustainable energy. Our renewable energy has gone up to 30% of the total energy in this province. Quietly, Nova Scotia has in fact had more wind energy introduced into the grid per capita for its size than virtually every jurisdiction in North America. And you know, it's where we want to go, and we want to do that in an affordable fashion. We do it with a combination of wind turbines that we own and actually wind turbines that communities own as well. So there's some great partnerships in that. The other is we've removed the emissions of effectively three coal plants. Now, it's interesting to describe that. We use 32% less energy from coal plants, which is effectively like closing the doors on three coal plants. We use them differently. We run them less, which allows for the affordable transition. The Mersey is the second largest hydro facility in Nova Scotia, and it is a very important part of getting and integrating renewable energy. It has the ability to not only produce no carbon energy, but it allows us to integrate other renewables because of the flexible operation you can generate at different levels, and that allows it to fill in the gaps when the wind's not there, is the easiest way to think about it. You know, when we first started this journey, I was to say the wind has to be blowing somewhere in Nova Scotia all the time. I thought that. Well, now we have the math. It doesn't. A couple of times a week, there is practically no wind in this province. And so you need a solution for customers. So the rebuild of the Mersey Hydro system will in fact facilitate that. It will fill in the gaps. It will also facilitate those renewable transformations as well. The technical numbers you see on this, there's a number, it's a measure of the amount of energy, and that's just to show the size of the Mersey Hydro system, and it's integral to us. And really that equates to more than 20,000 homes in Nova Scotia are powered by this system. But it goes beyond that because it allows more wind energy to be integrated as well. So there's a bit of a multiplying effect, if you will, when you think of this these facilities as well. So it's really a critical piece of infrastructure for all of us. It obviously has had a long partnership in this community for many years, going back to the 20s. If you go right back to, you know, pretty well the start of the time with the system. I'm going to hand it over to Mike now, who's going to give us a bit of a deeper dive into, well, what is the Mersey Hydro system? So over to you, Mike.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mark. So the Mersey Hydro system, Nova Scotia Power fully owns and operates the Mersey. It is comprised of seven developments, one which would be the Jordan Lake diversion into Rosignol, which you can see up there is our main reservoir for the system. It's a cascading system. The other six developments would be Upper Lake Falls, Lower Lake Falls, Big Falls, Lower Great Brook, Deep Brook, and Cowie Falls, which I've come to learn since I've moved to the area. Locally is known as Dam Number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So it took me a while to learn that, but I'm getting there. The other thing, at each of these bottom six developments, from Upper Lake right down to Cowie Falls, there's two hydroelectric generators in each plant. So there's a total of 12 generators on the Mersey. The other thing that we can see on this slide is there's the symbol of fish at the bottom three developments, which currently shows the installed fish passage on the Mersey. A little bit of history of the Mersey. You can see some dates up there when these developments were brought into service. But long before these dates, the Mersey River was a major transportation means for the Mi'kmaq people of Nova Scotia. And after that, it was a means to transport logs from out of the interior of the province out down into Liverpool. And that's when and why the Mersey was developed, was to power Liverpool for the lumber industry. So the current status of the Mersey, we're fully operational. All 12 generators are still operating, and we're doing it so safely. How we do this safely is with our rigorous maintenance programs and inspection programs on our generators and our dams. Another means of how we still operate this safely is our water management. We manage our water very closely. We monitor our weather patterns. We monitor that our storage is in the best place that we can put it to hold our highest inflow seasons. Another thing with managing our water on the safety side, we also have environmental requirements to meet. So that means that we operate under a environmental permit that is issued to us by Nova Scotia Department of Environment, which we have rules and regulations that we have to follow to comply within this permit. The other thing, it's my job to ensure that we manage this water safely and that we also meet our environmental requirements. And we all know with living in Nova Scotia, our weather patterns aren't very predictable, so it can be busy and it's quite a task, but we're still doing it safely.
So I guess I'll take over here and just give you guys an update on the redevelopment itself. So I guess I'll be responsible for delivering the redevelopment in the most safe and economical way that we possibly can. We're planning to make an application to the UARB in the next month or two, sorry, next 2 or 3 months, which is where we will ask for approval to execute on the first phase of the project. So Mike talked about the system being broken up in seven different developments. So we looked at this as six different phases, roughly. So each powerhouse and set of control structures or dams will represent a phase. We will make that application, and then we will get started on getting our design to a final state, procuring equipment over the next couple of months, and hopefully be into the process of executing on the first phase of the project starting in Q3 of next year, so around July to October time frame, and somewhere in that time frame. The system, the way we're going to break up the system, you can go to the next slide, please. The project is scheduled to run over a course of 8 to 10 years right now, and it's broken up into six phases over that period. And so we get six phases, roughly 2 to 3 years per phase is how we're going to execute. And the reason why we broke it up into those phases is we wanted to be able to manage water. Mike talked a lot about water management. So trying to go in and redevelop an entire phase, so if you wanted to go into number one and redevelop that part of the system all in its entirety, we create a water management problem. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go into one phase, number three. We're going to go at number three and develop the powerhouse there whilst maintaining the water control structures at that site. So we're not going to do any developments on that because that's going to allow us to pass water around that site. We'll go down to number four and work on the control structures at that site. We won't work at the powerhouse. And so we'll sort of piggyback that way through the system so that we're allowed to manage the water as we execute through the project. The other reason why we sort of broke up the project into these phases as well is so that we can tackle the ones. The Mersey is rich in archaeological history, we know that. It's identified as probably the richest spot in the province, with about 25% of all archaeologically in the province identified on the Mersey system. And so the approach that we took was we wanted to identify which aspects of the site were low potential and deal with those ones first whilst building a relationship, building protocols with the Mi'kmaq and with the regulators as we move forward so that when we get into those more difficult sites, we have a process already in place to deal with them. And so those two things, and then we also looked at, which aspects of the site, you know, had the largest amount of generation and trying to deal with those ones first so that we can get the most economical sites redevelop and get them back online as we go through the process. As we go through as well, we're going to need to go to our regulators from an environmental standpoint and make applications for the environmental aspects of the project, so Department of Lands and Forestries, Fisheries, all of those applications. The one correction that I'll make here is, so here it says that we're going to make those applications after we make the file with the URB. We're actually going to do that ahead of time. So we want to start that process early so that we get a head start on that. And by the time the URB application is rolling in, hopefully we're getting a favorable decision on the back end, we would have those applications approved and the permits already in hand. Consultation would have already happened. Our engagement process that we have been going through would have already taken place. We're making sure that we go into the system to protect, number one priority after safety, I would say number two priority after safety is to make sure that we protect the environment. So we don't want to erode the embankments or damage the embankments. We don't want to do any damage to the marine life. We're not going to do any damage to the forest structure around it. We're trying our hardest to make sure that we are executing this project in the most safe and the most environmentally friendly way. And so everything we do, we put those two things right at the forefront of our design and our planning, making sure that we design around all of the environmental impacts that we can possibly have. A big part of the process also here is our stakeholder engagement and our Mi'kmaq engagement plan and our platform that we're going to execute over the life of the project. So we do plan to establish a community liaison committee to sort of help us walk through the process and make sure that we're not overlooking anything, making sure the community is fully engaged and have a voice as a part of the project as we execute. We have spent the last 3 years already working with the Mi'kmaq, so we meet monthly. We have a Mi'kmaq working group established for the project, and we meet with them monthly, and we go through, we give them a chance to look at the design, look at where the impact areas of the project, and sort of listen to their concerns and sort of take their historical knowledge as well into the project development and design process as well. We will be starting a more broader communication process as we go forward. So giving the community updates on the project, we will establish a website so that we can have frequent and regular communication so that the community, the Mi'kmaq at large, everyone knows how we're progressing on the project. You'll be able to see right into what we're doing, regular photos and updates just so you can see how we're developing. We have been having open houses as well over the past 3 years. We've had a number of open houses, and that's going to ramp up as the project gets going here as well. So here in the next month, we would expect to have a broader community open house just to give a bit more context into the project, the planning process, the execution process as we go through as well. And those will continue right through the project as we want to make sure that the community is fully involved and fully engaged in everything that we're doing.
From an economic development and job perspective, which is always an interest of many in these types of projects, we have 6 employees presently in the Mersey working, and we have 41 employees in Nova Scotia Power here in Queens County. It is a project that follows over 8 to 10 years, and it has a very consistent workflow over that time period. Sometimes the winter months are a little slower because it's harder to do civil infrastructure during the winter here in Nova Scotia, but We anticipate that we may have up to 100 to 120 people working at peak during the peak periods during the project, but we'll always have a steady flow of work going on through the years as the, we redevelop the six sites. And those are mostly contracts. A lot of them are civilly based contracts, a lot of contracts around just construction, electrical, all the things that you would normally do when you build some type of industrial infrastructure. We are replacing the powerhouses, so there's going to be electrical, mechanical, all types of different aspects. And the goal would be to work with, obviously, get as many local community businesses that have opportunity to bid and be part of the procurement process. Also, community groups that have opportunity to provide services and things to the project teams, the consultants, the contractors. So having that awareness of what's available and what's happening in the community from a services perspective is very important for the project team to understand so that we can support the municipality here as the project moves forward.
So as we've discussed, there's a lot of opportunities that will come up, areas of importance to you and areas of concern for you as well. And we want to open a dialogue with you and work on those proactively together. We know for sure there's going to be some areas of interest, and we've identified a couple, but what we're looking for is to work with you on a regular basis on things that are of importance to you, doing tangible things that will help us get where we want to go. So inventorying skills of people in the area, how does that fit in with the project? Looking at opportunities like accommodations, where are people going to stay? What are the opportunities there, and what's the projected path of the project to support that if there's new investment in the area? And things like roads, safety, transportation, things like that as we move along. So again, this is just the beginning. We hope of a long-term, productive, and proactive partnership with you.
And probably to kind of summarize, and then I think we'll be very happy to take any questions you have. Today we just skimmed across the treetops of this project, and there's lots more that we can have a discussion on, and so there's a few things coming up. A big milestone Baron spoke to is that we make an application to the regulator for this project. That is something we would like to do before the end of the year, so it's not too far away. The investment in that phase is going to be over approximately $100 million. So it's a large project, that will be laid out in a lot of detail. I would invite that if there are any questions as with this application around what we're envisioning, we'd be happy again to come back, have a conversation, and make sure we work through all of the finer details. And again, just to reiterate what Lisa says, there'll be areas of opportunities and areas of concerns. And I think for us, we'd like an open, transparent, and timely discussion. And the liaison committees plus contact through Lisa. So Lisa has probably, if not given out her card to everyone, I do encourage you to get her card. She will find any of us, any day, anywhere. And that's real. and she will make sure that we come together on whatever the right frequency is. And Councillor Kelly, thank you for your suggestion on talking to the chamber. We are going to do that. The chamber doesn't know yet, but but it's those kinds of suggestions about who are interested parties that help us in this process, because even after the project is gone, we have a long-term relationship together, and this is an opportunity to strengthen and build that relationship. So, thank you.
So who would like to ask a question or comment? Councillor Fancy.
We haven't got enough time to all questions.
We are here at your pleasure.
Exactly. I might have to ask, and then, well, that's why I get in here early, because I might have to come back around again and go and catch you. I'm a stationary engineer. and so, and I worked at the mill, and I also worked as a boss down there, so I was up to your offices in Halifax to see how you buy the power, you know, mm-hmm. bring through. So it's an interesting, it's interesting overall, because I mean, you don't always just have to have power from here, you need power from elsewhere. So
that's
there's,
right.
There's all different avenues, people don't even understand where you can get power from. I still remember out the office of Halifax fellow sitting there buying power, he was just soaked all the time. He was under all the time. It's a very stressful job doing that. But anyway, the whole idea that used to be able to, with the merchant would always buy, awarded so much of a block of power because of, you know, for the monies before the, they would be paid for using, it was 25 megawatts, I think.
There was a split ownership structure for a period
yeah.
of time while the mill was there, and that transitioned to a full ownership, yes.
So what I'm understanding here, too, is with each one of your dams, what you're going to be doing, if I remember correctly, it was kind of a, right now you've got a dam like with a blocks, isn't it, to be able to open up for
the stop logs, yes.
So mm-hmm. you're not going to have stop logs, you're going to have an overflow, which will then in turn take away from that? Is that what it is?
No, so we're going to replace those stop logs with automated gates.
Okay.
So as opposed to someone having to go to site and having to pull a stop log one at a time, it will be automatic, or it will have a control system and you can just push a button and it opens up. So the type of gates, we're still looking at what type of gates, whether it'll be a horizontal opening, vertical opening. We're still going through the design process and figuring those things out, but that stop log mechanism goes away.
So along with that, there's going to be, from, and I forget now, I knew at one time how much you put out in each one of the generators, but I forget now, but you're going to at least double that, right, for your generators, so you're going to be able to chase the wind,
so
to speak. Yeah.
So the system will be built, so we did a study that looked at, you know, whether we should build the system back to its existing capacity or build it to a bigger capacity,
right.
And what we found out is that the guys that did it way back in the 20s, they know what they were doing. Because what our model said was that we put it right back to the exact same size. So the capacity will be the same. We're probably getting about a 1% increase in capacity, but just by true efficiencies in technology over time, we're getting 25% more energy out of the system. So it'll still look like 45 megawatts, but the energy that we're getting out is much more.
Storm could pass through, right?
Mm-hmm.
With your capacity, what you're going to do, because I'm always thinking that on high tide, all of a sudden, if you have to put out so much water, and you've got the high tide coming in, and all of a sudden that has a double effect on the water level that's going to come up in Liverpool. Is there anything built in to try to alleviate that? Or do you guys even, like if you know a storm's coming, do you try to lower the water level to be able to hold back the capacity so you don't have that volume. I don't know, I just asked a question.
I can take that up. So what we would do, depending where Rosignol is such a large storage,
right.
You know, if we were seeing 100 mil rain come in, because we can hold 101 GWH of water, we can't make a quick movement. But what we would definitely do is what we try to place Rosignol in a position for a time of high inflows like the fall, to hold water so that we can shut the top of the river off and run all the inflows on the bottom part of the river without running the top to minimize the water coming down the river.
And that's what you would have done even in
yep.
this last storm?
It's exactly what we would have done.
Okay.
We just would have run whatever inflows we would have seen on the bottom part of the river to alleviate what we can.
Okay.
So to expand that one little bit, my understanding is you release about 3,000 cubic feet per second down the system?
Our generators, yeah, we'd be pushing probably 2,600-2,700 CFS, yeah.
But you manage on flood control, not so much tidal control.
That is correct, yeah.
So actually you're managing your storage capacity and your flow capacity
yep.
in heavy rainfall events, not to match a high tide.
That is correct, yeah. We would be getting rid of the amount of water to manage the water safely for within the safe limits of the dams.
Okay. So does that help inform a little more on your question?
Yeah, I was more with the storms coming. Like, the storm's coming this weekend, and you say, with the high tide and with the flood mitigation issues we have today, that if you can help in any way of holding back some of the waters until when the high tide comes at all, something that makes that much worse.
If we're in a position to hold water, that's
yes.
how we would.
Yeah.
So typically, Raymond, so he's actually, all he's running is what's running in,
right.
rain amount on the lower end. So he's actually holding back everything from Rozick and all down. So,
right.
For instance, he could probably double that
right.
in that situation, which would definitely impact. But he does not offer it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So he's giving you half of what he typically can put down.
What
through,
Mother Nature
so.
Would
yeah,
put down.
Would put through.
Yeah.
So he's actually giving you what Mother Nature is putting in on the bottom end. That's coming either way. We
yeah,
can't hold that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Any other?